Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back to Mallory's Weird World Adventures, the podcast. I'm your host, Mallory, and I'm here to show you just how weird this world of ours really is. For those who are joining us for the first time, Weird World Adventures is a brand that focuses on travel overall, though our specialty lies in featuring the strangest and most unusual places in the world. We highlight myths, legends, belief systems, and weird people living weird lives in a very celebratory way. As a proud weirdo myself, I'm happy to see the brand come to life. You can watch Weird World Adventures on Amazon Prime, our TV show, or visit Mallory's Adventures, M-A-L-O-R-I-E-S, Adventures, for more. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or TikTok. On Instagram, we are at Mallory's Adventures. At Facebook, we are Weird World Adventures. And on TikTok, we are on Mallory's Adventures. Again, it's M-A-L-O-R-I-E-S, Adventures. As your guide and host, I'm a board member in the Washington, D.C. chapter of the Explorers Club, and I'm a journalist with a specialty in mythology, folklore, and the occult. Like I said, proud weirdo. I'm currently on the road filming Weird World Adventures Season 2. Like I said, you can watch Season 1 now on Amazon Prime, and the next season, which will consist of 10 episodes, will release on Amazon Prime in the fall of this year. We are currently beginning our coverage for this episode of the podcast while we are on the Fairy Tale Route in Germany. The Fairy Tale Route is celebrating its 50th year, and it highlights, obviously, all the fairy tales of Germany by celebrating the life of the Brothers Grimm. And it starts in Hanau. So this episode of the podcast will focus on Hanau and also Steinau, the first two major visits you can make while you're on the fairy tale route. So let's get started, shall we? I'm going to talk kind of about my experiences that I had along the way and what makes each of these places, I guess, unique and why they're on the fairy tale trail. So Hanau makes sense to be the starting place for the trail, because it is the birthplace of the Brothers Grimm. And when you go into their market center, right in the center of the town, you will see a statue of the Brothers Grimm. They also have art installations throughout the city that are constructed of various materials showcasing the different stories of the Brothers Grimm. And one of the major ones kind of in the center of the city is, of course, of Little Red Riding Hood. Now, something that's interesting about Little Red Riding Hood that I noticed right away while going down this trail is that the translation from the German is not Little Red Riding Hood. It's Little Red Cap. They call her, if they're just saying, you know, the translation, Little Red Cap. And a few people were surprised that it was called Little Red Riding Hood. I had a guide with me and then a museum curator, and the museum curator was asked, why would they call it Little Red Riding Hood? What does that even mean? And the guide says, no, that's what they call her in English. And then they asked me why, and I'm like, you know, I guess because she has a riding cape, and so, you know, the hood is part of the riding cape and it's red. But in the actual story, she has a red cap, and I guess the significance of that and the way that it was designed is because there is a kind of village of people that it was based on. So the Brothers Grimm, one of their other brothers was an artist, and he drew and illustrated some of the pictures for the second edition of the fairy tales, which we'll get to that, why there's a second edition a little bit later. But they had him illustrate them, and he specifically picked this village and the traditional cap, and it was usually like a red bonnet that these young girls wore, which, you know, which would be why she was called Little Red Cap. And of course, in other countries, other variations of the story, she wears something different. And then, of course, in the United States, it's a Red Riding Hood, because it's like a red riding cloak and cape, and here it was about the hat specifically, which I just thought that was interesting. And as you go through Hanau, I think the most interesting thing about that for me, you know, it's there because it's the birthplace of the Brothers Grimm, and they have the statues celebrating all of the famous stories that they had brought together. But the thing that stood out to me as a proud weirdo about Hanau is there's a park, and it was built because some, you know, rich nobleman of the city, the person running the city, found a spring there that was coming out of the ground. So they built a well around it, and it was supposedly this holy curing water that cured all ailments. And it was some magical, you know, this will cure the blind. This, it was supposed to be the water of miracles. And so they built this beautiful well around it, and it became the centerpiece for what would later be a park, because all the nobles then flocked to this place because, oh, we can heal our ailments. We need this magical curing water. Let's drink it. So it became a focus for the nobles of the town, and they built up around it because you can't just go walk into the woods and drink the curing miraculous water and be bored. No, we have to make a whole spectacle out of it. So it's interesting because it's a park that was built hundreds of years ago, but still just as beautiful today. And a lot of the structures are there, albeit it's not, you know, the same world, I guess, that it would have been a couple hundred years ago with people walking around the park there. But you can start out, walk through, and there's this beautiful tower ruins. And what's funny about that is it looks like the ruins of an old castle tower, but it was actually built to look like ruins of an old castle tower. So it's not the ruins of an old castle tower. It's just made to look like that. And, you know, the person running the town, you know, built that there so he could have his nice little house on that site so he could be close to the healing water in the park when he wanted to be there. And apparently he kept his mistress there. And whenever his wife would come to spend time at the park, the servants would put up a flag to notify him and his mistress that, oh, the wife is coming, so that they could prepare. But that seemed to be a special meeting place for him with his mistress, and he did stay there too. And has a beautiful little lake outside of it. It's a very pretty spot. And then you continue walking to a carousel. So there's this beautiful old carousel there, which was supposedly recently restored for quite a bit of money. And they have a little cover around it so when it's not in use, although occasionally it is still in use for, you know, the weekends and important days for people to come out. And they have little windows so you can still see the horses in there. And there's some beautiful old-fashioned carousel horses set up there. And it's built on a hillside, so the mechanics of it are actually underneath of the hill, which is really interesting. And then around that area, they built more attractions. So you have the carousel, and then it's kind of the machinery of it is built into the side of the hill. And then you can continue on around the carousel, and there's the Devil's Bridge. And it's called the Devil's Bridge for kind of a lame reason. I thought there'd be some mythology or folklore around it, but it's just called the Devil's Bridge because it's one of those moving bridges that is made almost like what they make for kids, but it's an old wooden one, and they call it the Devil's Bridge because the ladies did not like walking across that because it was scary, and their big old dresses, it would move and give them a fright. So the Devil's Bridge, and you cross over the Devil's Bridge, and you can actually go down under the carousel, and they have a little walkway down there called the Tunnel of Love because it was a place where young ladies and their partners or their prospective suitors could go underneath of the hillside in this little built tunnel to get away from everyone else so they could spend some time alone together. So that was the Tunnel of Love, and that's all right there on the hill. And as you keep going through the park, you'll find some other beautiful walkways. First of all, it's just green and lush and pretty. And then you arrive at the well. And it's obviously closed off today. Supposedly, it just dried up and the water stopped coming out, and that was it. You know, not that long after it was a well, and everyone kind of moved over there. So now it's just the base of what used to be a well. But it has these stairs walking down to it. It's a very articulately designed well with beautiful, the stairs are plain and kind of red, but then the handrails are beautiful and ornate, and there's this just circle around where the well was and painted floors, and it's made to look very nice. Domed arches. Like, when I say a well, people could go into the structure and stand around it. It's quite fascinating. Then you continue on through the park, and there's a bunch of other places you can see, but then there's a hill that snakes around and has this kind of path, like, swooping around up and through it. There is a pond with a pyramid on it. Apparently the pyramid was the son of the man who built all of it, who had it all built, had passed away, so the pyramid is the grave of his son. And it's all very pretty. I mean, it looks like something that nobles would care deeply about in, you know, older times. And then from there, we went to the palace. The palace is now a museum and a restaurant and a place that people can rent to have weddings. And it's very pretty. I mean, it's one of those square, like, parliamenty kind of structures. It's not what you would think of, like, a castle or anything, but so palace is a good word for it. And it had these lion statues outside, so I really personally liked that. And then inside it has the beautiful Baroque, Rococo, different periods. There's a bunch of different periods in these buildings because they were renovated through different times, and it has different art on display and these beautiful hanging chandeliers, and, you know, the room's made of gold. It's just beautiful. And then they have a wing of it dedicated to the Brothers Grimm and fairy tales. And there's a huge part of it that's very interactive for children, which was nice. They had interactive screens telling stories, and then you could go through and you could climb a wall to save the princess, a little rock wall, and games. Just, it made the learning experience for children out of the fairy tales, which was very nice. And then it has a huge picture on the wall of the full fairy tale route through Germany, and where you can go to experience it all, and, you know, the way in which you should go. And there are a lot of places. I'm hitting the major ones, but there are many, many, many places on the fairy tale route. And it takes you throughout central of Germany, because Hanau is right over by Frankfurt, all the way up to the north of Germany in Bremen. And it ends shortly past Bremen, but they say, you know, the last major city really on the route is Bremen, which is nice. I've been to Bremen too, and it did have a very interesting fairy tale-like feel to it. And they specifically highlighted the Bremen town musicians. So there is a Brothers Grimm tale that we don't really talk about in America called the Bremen Musicians, and it's for barn animals that get together and they wind up becoming musicians. And it's funny because they stand on each other and they perform, and there's a statue of the four of them standing on each other in Bremen, and if you hold on to it, it brings you good luck, but you have to do it in a specific way. So that's a fun highlight if you actually make it up to Bremen to look for the town musicians. And then, after seeing all of these wonderful things in Hanau very, very quickly, we moved on to Steinau. And Steinau is where the Brothers Grimm grew up. So they were born in Hanau, but then they moved to Steinau, and that was really where they spent their childhood, and that was what gave them those influential years. And a lot of people think that Steinau has a big motivation into the stories that they told and the feel and aesthetic that the stories were given because they were so happy in their childhood. And a lot of the small houses, the way that they had the look and feel, is very much like you would expect a Brothers Grimm fairy tale to look like. That small town, little village, you know, fairy tale house. If you picture a fairy tale house, the houses in Steinau look like that. And that's not a mistake. And I got to stay at the Bürgermeister's house right in the center of the town square. And it's very small. And I love that it's just this small little fairy tale village. And I stayed in this beautiful house, the Bürgermeister house, which is authentic to the time. Nothing had been torn down in Steinau. During the war, a lot of Germany was destroyed during the Second World War. Steinau was not. So the buildings were very authentic to what they were back in the time of the Brothers Grimm. And it was very exciting to kind of get to stay there. And, you know, the clock tower was directly across from where I was staying. I parked my car right at it. It was all part of that just central area. And then there was the old castle right next to us, which is now just a bunch of apartments. So you can live in an old castle if you want to move to Steinau. And then directly across the street from the Bürgermeister house was the house in which the Brothers Grimm grew up. Now, their father had a very important position in Steinau, and so he moved there to basically work in the building that collected the taxes and kind of ran the official operations of the city. So they lived in that house with other families of the people who were notably running the town. So they were very important in this town. Their father was someone of note, and they grew up well in this house because of it. They often talked about, you know, how great their childhood was and remember those days when we grew up in Steinau with our father. And it sounded like the perfect happy family, and they were able to have tutors come in because, you know, they worked at the official government, you know, their father worked at the official government house and they lived there. And so they had, you know, tutors, their family was well taken care of, and it was just a nice time. And that you can see how that inspired the aesthetic of their stories. And like I mentioned, their brother, their other brother, was an artist, and he did the illustrations for these tales. So they might have incorporated some of those design elements into the storytelling aspects, and then the brother incorporated that into the design of how they looked. Now, what's interesting, I think, about the Brothers Grimm telling these stories is that a lot of people credit them for creating the stories, for being the first people to tell these tales, but that's not true at all. They actually didn't create, really, any of the stories that they told in these, you know, famous fairy tales. A lot of these fairy tales came from France. They met a lot of people throughout their journeys while they were growing up and into early adulthood who came from France, who came from different places. They met many people who told different variations of these stories, of these, you know, fairy tales. And they became fascinated with the idea that these tales were quite different across, you know, you could tell the same story with the same name in one city in Germany, and then another city in Germany, the tale's quite different. There's different versions of them. And that obviously expands much further for the rest of the world. Well, this story is told one way in Germany, but very differently in France. And many, many of the stories came from relationships they had with people from France. And there was one woman in particular who kind of inspired a lot of their tales, who told these stories, and they credit her for them in the works, that, you know, she was the one that kind of got them excited about these stories. And so they didn't create them. They just brought them all together in a collection and put them down in a specific language. They were linguists. They really studied the human word. And actually, one of their first contracts into writing was to write a dictionary. So they were librarians at one point in time when they lived in Kassel, and they studied language. They studied a lot of things. They studied, you know, being attorneys for a while and couldn't stand that and gave up on that. And they went through many different studies, but they worked in a library. I think that's where they found their love of writing and words and books. And that was something they did for a long time. And eventually, as they wanted to become writers, they got commissioned to write a dictionary where they had to write out every word. And apparently that was stressful and terrible and just not for them. But it helped them become connoisseurs of language and really become professionals at writing, specifically in German. So they took these stories and they gave them a very specific language, and they wrote them down meticulously to be the stories that we know of today. What's also interesting is that the versions that we know today for kids are not the original versions they wrote down. They were much darker. I think we all know the Brothers Grimm's tales are pretty dark, but the original versions were dark and not for children and had, you know, sexual undertones and things that were not suitable for children. They were almost darker and clever and funny in a way, satirical, but they weren't for kids, and they didn't sell. They did not sell well because it was lost on adults. And it was pointed out to them that, well, these are great for kids because they have all of these great messages that you want to teach your children. Like, every single one has some kind of morality or just common sense thing that needs to be given to a child to learn from. So in the second edition of stories that they made from it, they made it for children. They took out the sexual undertones. They took out that Rapunzel got pregnant. Made it for children. And something my guide said to me today in Castle, which is just shocking to me, I don't know, it didn't make sense, but I guess at the time it did, was they, one of the changes they made to it to make it more correct for children was, you know, in the stories, the mothers were not good people, and the mothers, you know, were notoriously the villains, and they said, we can't have that in children's stories, so they just made it the stepmother. So apparently making it a stepmother made it okay for children, because it's not their mother that's being cruel, it's the stepmother, which, to me, that's I don't quite see the difference there, but I guess at the time that was a stark difference. Anyway, back to Steinau. So when you go to Steinau, you can actually see this house that they grew up in with their family. And it's beautiful. It's, again, it was, you know, an official house of the town. So it has the tower where the stairs were. It has the traditional German architecture to it with the, you know, the brown dark wood and the white clay around it. And you go inside, and it's a beautiful little homage to the Brothers Grimm now in the house there. And what's unique about this house, and the reason that you should visit it, is because there's no other building in Germany that is still standing as the original building that exists in which they lived. This is the only place they lived that still is standing as it was at the time, because a lot of Germany, you know, was destroyed. And this house was not, which is great. So you can actually see the space in which they lived and imagine them walking through it. There's a beautiful room of these little fairy tale, like, collages that an artist put together, which is nice in there. There's a lot of fun homages to the tales. And then there was this roll, which I thought was interesting. They had a digital version of it, of this role that their brother, who was the artist, took while he was on vacation. And so he drew, like, because he was an artist, he sketched this, like, his whole journey on a, like, panel by panel on just this long stretching piece of paper and, you know, rolled it all up. So you could read, effectively, almost like a comic book, his journey across the way in pictures. And it actually has the house that we were at, where they grew up, in there, their childhood home. So it's part of this journey. So it's interesting, you can recognize some of the familiar places from the journey by following their trail. And it was funny because this was in Steinau, in the house they grew up in. And the curator there was just lovely. And she's like, oh, I'll show you. I have a copy of this piece. I'll show you. And like a copy. She's like, yeah, this is just a copy. And it's a beautiful copy, but they still treat it. You know, they have the white gloves on when they touch it. And it's this precious artifact, but it's just a copy. And no one remembered where the original was. Like it was in some institution somewhere on display, but they didn't remember where it was. And then I happened to see the original today here in Kassel, because there is a museum here dedicated to the Brothers Grimm, and it's there. So when I saw that in the actual museum today, the actual copy of it, I was very excited because, oh my gosh, that's it. That's the one. That's the original one. Because it was such a piece of conversation. And we were in Steinau, and my guide in Steinau was Puss in Boots. You can have guides through the town that take you through the Brothers Grimm's footprints, and they're all in fairy tale character. And mine today was Puss in Boots, and she was wonderful. It was very exciting. We had a lovely time. And, you know, they were able to give that setting of what it was like when the Brothers Grimm lived there, because their father passed away when they were still relatively young, and they were immediately kicked out of this house because they were living in this nice, you know, governmental space, you know, the people running the town, and were moved to the poorhouse next door because their mother was a single woman with, you know, out of a job because her husband provided for her. So they went from being these very important people in the town to being just almost undesirable, because now they're living in the house for the poor, and you know, they're a faux pas to talk to them. And so they went from being important to being not just irrelevant, but almost, you know, castaways from society, because then they lived in the poorhouse next door, and that really affected them and was a huge part of their life that inspired them to move into the creative arts. And suddenly their tutor no longer came to them. They had to go to the school with all the other kids to take lessons, and that was not well received. They didn't like that they had to go, and their teacher was quite rude to them, and they didn't like that either. So that was something that they were not happy about. I mean, how could you be happy about that? And as we walked through Steinau, we went to the palace. Like I said, the castle of the town is still there, but now it's been turned into apartments, but you can still walk around the structure of it. And directly outside of the city wall, because this town is very still in place in the way that it was. It hasn't been really disturbed much anyway. So the castle walls are still there. And when you walk outside of it, you can see this cute little spring that was there that they used to like to go to and, you know, to kind of play in the water. And that was another part of their inspiration. So it was interesting to kind of get to experience their inspiration in Steinau and how their footprint there affected the aesthetic of the fairy tales that we all know and love today. And the Brothers Grimm Street is the big main street that goes through Steinau, so that's also fun. And it's just a very picturesque storybook-like town, and it's absolutely worth the visit. That was one of my highlights, because again, I liked the small village feel and getting to stay in the center of everything. And they have a lot of knowledgeable guides. They really thrive on knowing the story and motives of the Brothers Grimm in Steinau. So make sure you go through their tourist information to book one of their guides, and maybe you'll get Puss in Boots too, because she was absolutely wonderful. And the Burgermeister house that I stayed in, like I said, it was authentic to the time. The man that lives there now is a hunter, and he would actually go out and hunt his own, you know, meat, and then come back, and they would make it into salami and different types of meats and sausages. And so when you stay on the property there, if you eat meat, they have a lot of home-cooked, authentic, actually, you know, made in that home meats and cheeses and different foods, and it was very delicious, and it really just feels like an old rustic home. So I can't recommend that enough. So again, if you're going to follow the fairy tale route, which I hope you do, be sure to start in Hanau and then move on to Steinau. Steinau, you cannot be missed, because again, that is the only place still standing where the Brothers Grimm actually lived. And it's really, it transports you into the world and their mindset to see how they left their mark on these tales and why they were not actually written by them. They were told anew through their lens. And those are the stories that we now know very well today. And the aesthetic and the way that we know these tales is because of the Brothers Grimm. And you're able to see that feel in Steinau and understand their inspiration. So I cannot recommend it enough. That is all I have for you today. Tune in next week while we continue to discuss the fairy tale trail and two additional places along the trail that you have to check out for yourself. And you'll also see it on Weird World Adventures if you tune in. So again, make sure you watch Weird World Adventures on Amazon Prime. Season 1 is out now, and Season 2 is coming out in the fall. Please follow us everywhere at Mallory's Adventures on Instagram and TikTok, and Weird World Adventures on Facebook. Until next time, everybody, stay weird.